Greetings, and welcome to another episode of the Wandering One podcast, brought to you by Wandering One Studios and yours truly, your host, Link Flores. Hope you guys are all having a wonderful day, and today is Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. Had to get a sip of my tea because it's really hot today. Before we get into it, I just wanted to say first and foremost, as always, thank you all so much for taking some time out to listen to the podcast. Thank you to everyone who's been sharing it on social media or just with friends and relatives or coworkers. It really does mean a lot, and it's impressive to me. It never ceases to amaze me how many people that I don't know personally are telling me, like, yo, I listened to your podcast because so-and-so told me about it, or I saw it on the public posts on Instagram or on Facebook, and I really like what you're doing. And it's kind of humbling and also kind of telling that not a lot of people that I've known, I mean, some people I've known for decades even, haven't even bothered to turn it on once. So for those of you out there who are doing it, it means the world to me. And those of you who just came in organically and just were like, oh, I just found this, that's even more impressive because I didn't think it would have this kind of reach. So again, very humbled, very grateful, and super stoked. The Patreon episodes are going to be uploaded this weekend. So if you're looking for them, you're like, where do they go? Well, the real problem was that the Patreon episodes are to be cultivated from questions from you guys, the loyal listeners, and this, in particular, the Patreon subscribers. It's a bonus episode. So it's two bonus episodes a month for just $3. You can check it out at patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. But the problem that I had was I only got one question the entire month of March. So it was a little hard to just fake up a bunch of stuff because I could make up something, sure, but it's supposed to be kind of like a little bit of your feedback into the podcast. So if you're a Patreon subscriber out there and you hear this, go and give me a holler on Patreon and let me know what your questions are, comments, you want to share a recipe, a joke, whatever. But just give me something to fire back with you guys because this is my way to engage directly with you. This is your shot. So don't miss out on it. It's $3 that's going to go to waste if you don't do something with it. So let's make it worth your while, right? I got plenty of time and I'd love to answer your questions or read your comments and whatnot. So please hit me up there. And if you're new to this and you're new to Patreon, just go to patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. Why not try a 7-day free trial? See if you like what you see there, what you're hearing there. And if you do, then consider supporting. That's appreciated. All you have to do is just give it a peek. And after that, if you're looking for more content, and why wouldn't you want to watch me be bad at video games, you can come and check me out on twitch.tv/linkib. That's L-I-N-K-I-B-E. That's where I do some, I've been doing a lot more RPG content over there, role-playing games, and a little bit more casual, cozy kind of games, just chill vibes and whatnot. Occasionally, the shooter or, you know, action platformer or action adventure game creeps in there, but I've been taking a little bit of a different direction this year. Wanted to kind of ease my content down a notch or two and just kind of let me engage more with the community and relax and enjoy gaming. And I think it's working. We'll find out soon. But please check me out over there on Twitch if you'd like to see more of that kind of content. I would really appreciate you guys visiting me there. A lot of people who listen to podcasts such as this one probably consume it through a mobile device, you know, cell phone, maybe a tablet. Maybe you listen to it in your car on Sirius XM. Some of you might even be listening to it on your PC while you're sitting at home. But a vast majority of people that I've come to find listen to this podcast, listen to it through a mobile platform. So usually your cell phone. And I was thinking about cell phones recently because my wife and I have had these cell phones for, I'm thinking, going on about 3 years now. The last update we had was right, I think, just before the pandemic fully hit swing, and that was like early 2020. So we're well and ready due for a new upgrade, right? Now, our current carrier offers a phone that I was interested in, the Samsung Galaxy S420, let's try this one more time. Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. That is a mouthful of words to say. That was the new hot phone. Came out the beginning of this year. I'm like, we should look into getting an upgrade. However, the more I look into upgrades, the more disappointed I am with the state of, one, technology, and two, the offerings that are out there. When our phones came out, they weren't even brand new. They were pretty much on their way out. And it was really disappointing that AT&T, this is the provider, let's go ahead and be real with it, actually was like, here, you can have this old ass phone. The new one will be out in like maybe a couple of weeks or a month. And that's exactly what happened. But we'll give you this old ass phone and call it an upgrade so we can screw you guys out of a couple hundred, almost $2,000 for a phone that we're not going to support in less than 7 months. And that's exactly what happened. So when I needed to go get replacement stuff for the phone, whether it's a screen protector or a case or something like that, they were all shoulders. No, we don't know what happened. You can upgrade now. Like, bitch, I just upgraded not even a year and a half ago. Why don't you still have the shit for this phone?
Oh, we stopped supporting that one about 7 months back.
Why would you even bother in good conscience as giving me this phone as an upgrade if you were going to have a new model that you knew was coming down the pipeline? It made me so crazy. So I started looking at other phones that were out there, trying to find a better deal, maybe even a better company than what I'm currently dealing with right now. And I have news to report. It ain't great out there. That's not to say that it's wall-to-wall crap, right? So there's a couple of offerings that are offered straight through AT&T, the Google Pixel 8 and the Galaxy S24 Ultra. So looking at those side by side and a couple comparisons and whatnot, I was like, you know, the Pixel is not as powerful as the Galaxy. Doesn't have any real tech bonuses that make it feel like it's a bumped up version of the phone. You know, like you feel like you're really getting a good deal on it. But the thing that made it decent was that the price wasn't nearly as high as the S24 Ultra. Now, the S24 Ultra is great power and performance, solid hardware, but you're paying an ultra premium price for this thing. That's why they call it ultra. It's $1,300 for the model that includes the S Pen, which is their proprietary stylus pen. Now, I love the S Pen that I have on my current phone. I use it practically every other day, mainly because I use it for grocery lists or if I'm trying to highlight something that I'm reading or circle something for somebody or write directions. I have to draw a map. Like, the S Pen's super versatile for me personally, but not for $300. The base model of the phone without the stylus is just around $1,000. So the addition of this one pen is $300. That's right, which makes this model come out to about $1,300. That's way too much for one stupid-ass stylus. I'm sorry. As much as I like a stylus, I'll forgo one if it comes at that cost. I'd rather buy a case that has a stylus built into it than pay that much money for one phone and a little plastic stick. They got to be out of their fucking minds. So where do you go if you want a reasonable alternative, and especially if you're in the Android ecosystem like I am? You're an iPhone, you know what you're locked in for. You ain't getting no versatility. Whatever. That's your choice. And you're welcome to make all the incorrect decisions and opinions that you want to make. But there are some options out there for folks like myself and others who are looking at the Android ecosystem and want to have a little bit more versatility and also not quite as inflationary of a price point as an iPhone or even as the Samsung Galaxy, right? So one of the new phone technologies that I've been studying up on is from this company called Nothing. And they've produced a Phone 1 and a Phone 2. And I'm interested in these because these new brands that are coming out seem to be more focused on the longevity of the hardware and the software upgrades, as well as producing a more eco-friendly phone, right? So the Nothing Phone 2 seems like a more logical choice for me personally if I was to pick one up. It's got similar features, similar power sets and chipsets and the hardware compared to like the Pixel or the Galaxy, but it's way less expensive. One thing you're not paying for is a stylus, which is kind of a drag. But if you have a chance to go look up the Nothing Phone 2, when you see this, you're actually kind of paying a slight premium for the styling of it. It's a very slick looking phone. It looks like something that fell straight out of a science fiction film. It's about $650 or so for the 512 gigabyte model. So it's not nothing to sneeze at, but at that price point, I mean, you might be missing a couple of bells and whistles here and there, but if you're looking for a solid phone, this might be one of the ones to take a peek at. I'm looking mainly because I'm curious about what the options are, and I'm sure the wife and I will talk it over eventually and go like, you know, if we're going to upgrade, we should at least get something that will have some support going into the future. Another company is called the OnePlus, and they have it's called OnePhone. OnePlus 12 is their newest offering. This one's a little steeper. Now, while it's not as expensive as the Galaxy, it takes a little bit more of the bite out of the pocket than the Nothing 2. Clocks in at about $900 for the 512 gigabyte model, and it's similar to the other phones that I mentioned on this list, but it has a smoother, more contemporary look, so it's not as flashy as the Nothing phone. If you ever get, like I said, when you get a chance to look at the Nothing phone, it's got like a double glassed housing on it. So the back has lights and glyphs that can light up to let you know, hey, you're getting a text message. This is a voice call. This is an email. And you can customize the phone a bunch of different ways. It's a wonderful looking phone and it's really cool. But I think part of the thing is that like the OnePlus is packing in a little bit more hardcore tech, I think. And it's not going for flash. So it's trying to move into a smoother, like it's like a mid-range phone between which you would pay like a super high premium price for. And like maybe not a low-end phone, but a more economical phone like an Asus or something like that. Which are also relatively decent phones, but if you're a tech-savvy user, if you're a power user, you use a lot of apps, you use a lot of processing power for, maybe you edit photos in your phone, maybe you clip videos, do TikTok stuff, you know, they might not have the most power that you want. So this is another option out there, the Nothing 2 and then the OnePlus 12. And the most recent one that I was starting to take an eye at was this company that I'm not sure if it's the one that I heard about before. I think it's the same kind of concept though. This is a unique one. And like when I said, I was looking for something that kind of fit more my own personal values as well as my product, you know, my price point. I think I may have found one. I have to give it a better look, but it doesn't sound like a loser right yet. This company is called Fairphone. And it's a very interesting concept, but for what you're paying for this phone, it sounds like they're really on the right track to maybe taking over the market. The more people get to know about them, the more people will buy them, the more their brand will expand, the more functionality and features and bonuses they can offer. This one caught my eye, and I'm very curious about finding out how I can get one of these, even if it was just a test model, just so you can, you know, I could play around with it for a little bit and see how I like it. I'm going to put a link in the descriptions to these companies that I've mentioned. You already know where to go for Google, iPhone, and Samsung. But for the Nothing, the One, and the Fairphones, I'm going to leave a link in the description. So if you're curious, you can go check them out yourself. Fairphone grabbed my eye for a couple of reasons. One, it's very slick looking. It has a very contemporary cell phone look. It's not going to look freakish or weird. Like I said, the Nothing can be a little too sci-fi maybe for some folks. This is a very accessible looking phone. One of the other great things about it is it's also a modular phone. So you have the ability to place in the components that are most relevant to you. Do you need a little bit of extra processing power? Would you prefer a different kind of camera? Are you looking to maybe boost your wireless capacity or something? Like they have mods that you can swap out and you can kind of create your own Frankenphone, as it were. The other thing they do is that they have repair kits so you can actually fix your phone at home if something goes wrong. You don't have to ship it off somewhere. You don't have to find somebody in a mall kiosk to take it and do God knows what to it. You can do this at home. The other thing is they're made with eco-friendly materials and like a design concept that is so that they can use reusable materials, recyclable materials, cut down on waste, cut down on, you know, the expiration dates on batteries and whatnot, like the half-lives. They're trying to work hard to produce tech that actually is future forward and thinking, you know, hey, you want to have this phone, but you don't want to have to buy a new phone. You know, like I said, $1,300 for a Samsung S24 Ultra, that's insane. And then they want you to do that every couple of years. That's more stuff that's going into a landfill or going into the ocean, polluting our, you know, Earth even more than we already are, right? So why not have future forward tech? That's what they're focusing on. They are also putting in a 5-year warranty and software and security updates for this phone, the Fairphone 5, planned into 2031. I went to their website, and this is priced out in euros, so I did a little bit of finessing with the numbers to try to make sure I got the close to the true price point as it could possibly be, right? One of the things they also do is they don't include a charging cable because they figure either you have charging cables that have been laying around forever, and if you want one, we will send you one, but we'd rather you just maybe use the stuff that you have so we're not having to put out extra plastic or, you know, whatever. Smart concept. Lots of people have multiple bricks, cables, all that jazz around, or you could find one for relatively cheap. Why pay for it with your phone? Doesn't make sense. But I went ahead and priced this thing out with a case, a screen protector for the Gorilla Glass, and a charging cable with the adapter, which, like I said, is not normally included. The phone prices out at around $880, just out the door. The other cool thing about it is, and if you have the ability to pull the trigger on this before, I think, like next week, they're offering a 100 euro parts card free if you buy it before the 8th of April. So they're throwing in $100 worth of parts, essentially, that you can have for free, and it's valid for, I believe, 3 years. I have to check the website for the details. I forgot to write that one down. But yeah, like a free parts card. So they're really looking to push this this initiative. And I am going to see if I can contact them and be like, you know what? I'd really like to get a hold of one of these phones. Maybe I don't have $900 almost to throw down on this phone, but even still, like, that's not a bad deal. And I believe that the one I priced out to was still rocking a 512 gigabyte interior, you know, storage. So that's a damn fine deal. So this is just a couple of ideas for you. If you're out there and you're looking for some cell phone stuff that you want to get a hold of, maybe you're tired of the constant upgrading and you're basically leasing your phone forever and ever and ever from your, you know, cell phone provider. Maybe something a little bit more future forward, maybe something a little bit more futuristic looking, or maybe something that kind of hits the fair stride between the two ends of that spectrum. These are some options you might want to check out. So you can benefit from my research. Hopefully we'll all benefit from some research in the very near future. The one person who ain't benefiting from it, damn it, is Donald friggin' Trump. So you guys have probably heard this by now, but old Donnie boy did it again, man. I'm telling you, they don't call him Teflon Don for nothing. Nothing seems to stick to this guy. He gets a $175 million bond, which means that he, pending appeals, won't have to worry about any property seizures. Now, I think he's still on the hook for the fines, of course, but at least he doesn't have to go to prison or have his property seized to pay him off as yet. So he gets more time to bullshit and play through the system, so that he can whittle away everybody's self-confidence and, you know, where they'd be able to prosecute, whittle away, like, the public's, you know, fervor for his head right now. And I know that this is a legal strategy. It's like, you know, we can wear him down in appeals for decades if we really need to. It's a disgusting tactic. I think it's something that the legal system has definitely gotten wrong on several occasions from time immemorial, it seems. But we're kind of stuck now. However, there's some interesting things to note about this whole scenario. The one thing I've come to realize is that monetary punishments like these never fully seem to resolve. So it almost seems like a wasted effort to throw, like, punitive damages in terms of dollars at somebody like Trump. Because what happens if he defaults? He's gotten the money from somebody else. Well, if he can't pay it, then they have to go after that company. Well, that company can't pay it, then maybe they shuffle some assets or they borrow it from someone else and they get to recoup their losses. So they're basically just shoveling debt on down the line. It's like money laundering. It sounds like a Martin Scorsese film or something. You know what I mean? Like a weird accountancy version of The Godfather. We never actually pay anybody anything. We just kind of keep shuffling debt on down the line. Kind of like American, you know, economic policy. Just, we never pay anybody back. We just raise the debt ceiling, give ourselves more money, supposedly, for this, that, and the other, and then nothing ever gets fixed or changed or solved. Here's where I feel like if you're like, oh my God, Link's got his tinfoil hat on, you might want to bear with me for just a few more moments here. There's a little bit more, like I said, the tea's pretty hot on this one, and I did a little digging, and I think you're going to be interested in what I have to say. Now, the $175 million bond that's was secured to keep Trump out of prison was posted by a company called Knight Specialty Insurance. Knight Specialty Insurance has a very interesting pedigree. So it's chaired by one Don Hankey. He owns a conglomerate group called the Hanke Group, and he happens to be the largest individual shareholder in an internet bank called Axos with a 6% share. Now, 6% might not seem a lot, but when it's an online bank, usually you're getting into, again, like a holding company, or you've got like a conglomerate of companies of certain types. Maybe it's real estate, maybe it's financial technology, but they buy into a bank in order to kind of, you know, shore up their investments with that bank. This is one person who put down 6%. That's a lot to invest in a bank, especially if it's just one guy. Here's where it gets a little stickier, though. Axos has formally helped refi Trump Tower to the tune of $100 million. And they also helped bankroll Jared Kushner's Kushner Companies. So they've had ties to Trump and his family for a while. They've been in the Trump pockets for a hot minute. And it's kind of interesting that these are the people who are supposedly having his back, and he's right on the verge of defrauding his own, you know, Republican base. So, I mean, I guess what goes around comes around, huzzah. But at the same time, it's just a big ass shell game, which makes it really weird. Here's another one. Here's another thing you're gonna love. Hanke earned his nickname as the King of Subprime Car Loans as he was building up the Hanke Group of companies. So, I mean, it looks like we're just having swindlers borrowing from swindlers. So it really is, like I said, a big ass shell game in politics. It might be one of the biggest in recent memory, you know? And here's to like drive it a little bit more home. Axos, remember, which is partly owned by Don Hanke, who owns Hanke Group and which has Knight Specialty Insurance under its umbrella, the people who loaned Donald Trump this $175 million, have had allegations of loaning to criminals, like actual crime organizations and criminals, and has also been accused of usurious interest rates. Elizabeth Warren, you guys remember her, right? Back in 2022, was taking after the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency because they were supposed to be watchdogging banks like Axos. In some instances, Axos was charging interest rates up to 92%. You probably have a credit card at home, you know, well, in your pocket right now. I mean, you probably have a home loan or something. What do you think the annual percentage rate is on your home? If you were to guess and didn't know, let's say you're a credit card. What do you imagine like the average of all your credit cards annual percentage rates are? Maybe you're looking at somewhere between 18 to maybe even as high as 35%. Imagine paying three times that much in interest. That's almost as bad as a payday loan where they charge you 270% interest. I know, I had to deal with it before. When you're broke, sometimes you don't have a lot of options, and that was what I had to deal with. So they're almost as predatory as a payday loan company. But I mean, in terms of financial products, a 92% interest rate? That's literally robbery. There's no way around it. So Axos and by proxy, Don Hanke and Knight Specialty Insurance are up to some pretty shady sounding stuff. Now, Axos has denied these allegations about operating with criminals, but they haven't been able to dodge the ones about those insurance rates, those interest rates, because that's on paper. And maybe you can say, oh, well, you know, so-and-so funneled money through this company, through that company, and they invested it into Axos Bank, and then they did this. There could be a little bit of fudging the books right there. But it's very, very interesting to find out that this bank and this company and this man have been kind of like, you know, shell gaming money around, and now they're doing the exact same thing, not just with Donald Trump, but also with the American legal system. This is a big, ballsy move to take, too, because if he defaults, they're holding the bag for it. What happens then? Do they pay it off? Do they run it through a bunch of shell companies and say, oh, wait, we got it. Hold on, we just need a little bit more time. And then they just literally just shuffle shit around? Or are they going to be on the hook for it? And then will they come after Donny Boy? I think I would almost rather be in trouble with the federal government than with somebody who's willing to lend money to gangsters and criminals. That is just my opinion, though. And like I said, to the moment of this recording, this is pretty much just conjecture as far as like what their supposed or alleged illegal dealings or illicit dealings might be. But, you know, it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck. We just gotta wait and see, which is unfortunate because that's exactly what he wants. It's exactly what his legal team wants, is for us to just have to wait and see. And hopefully if they just stall and stall and stall enough, eventually, you know, it's like when you play hide and seek with someone who's really good, you can't find them, and you just go, you know what? Fine, Frank, you've been out here for half an hour. Where are you? And then Frank crawls out of the vents in your house. You're like, okay, he's like, I guess I'm free now. Like, that's kind of what he's waiting for. He's waiting for us to not be able to find a way to pin him down so he can pop out and be like, okay, you didn't get me. I'm going back to the White House. It's disappointing, but I guess it's what it is. Another kind of disappointing news. The state of Florida decided to screw women over once again, but they're going to let you have a say in it. This is going to be interesting. Walk with me. In 2022, Florida imposed a 15-week ban on abortions, essentially saying that up until the 15-week mark of a pregnancy, a woman is able to have abortion. After that, it's illegal. Now, advocacy groups have argued that this particular ban violates a privacy provision that's written into the Florida State Constitution, but the Florida State Supreme Court overruled it 6-1 and said they didn't really see that there is any standing for applying that doctrine to the ruling that they made for the 15-week ban. The weird thing about it is because of that, it kind of opened the door for a new proposal for a 6-week ban that would make abortion, in essence, practically illegal. A lot of people, if you've had children, you know this. If you've been with somebody who's had children, you probably are aware of this. But up to 6 weeks, you could pretty much not even know you were pregnant. So by the time you were able to find out for sure, it could be too late for you to have an abortion. Now, they wanted to go ahead and throw out the same concessions that, you know, in cases of rape or incest or sexual assault or, you know, that this, that, and the other, you know. I think that they're also trying to find a way to make sure that that doesn't quite happen. It's funny that pro-life doesn't necessarily mean the life of the mother or the family that's going to have to raise a child. I think it really just means pro-conception, which is super archaic and stupid in my personal opinion. Everybody has their own, I'm sure. But as someone who was raised in the church, I find it also highly irresponsible to basically mandate procreation without doing anything to take care of the children that are created. That could be a wild idea, you know what I mean, for some of these super conservatives out there who just can't see their way around, you know, sometimes a baby being, you know, someone being impregnated isn't necessarily part of the plan. I know that's tough for you guys to wrap your heads around, but trust me, just because mom didn't swallow you doesn't mean that everybody else has to put up with you, you know? So I'm sitting here looking at this and, you know, realizing that this, what the medical ramifications behind this mean. At 6 weeks, some people are like, hey, sometimes my period's late. Sometimes it's a little wonky. Maybe it's the weather. Maybe I wasn't feeling well. Any number of things could have been happening that could maybe throw off a woman's cycle so they wouldn't know. And then you would know 6 weeks down the road, you go to week 8. Oh, not feeling so great. Well, it's too late. You're fucked. You're having a kid. So now you either have to have a child that you're not prepared to have or don't want to have, or you have to take yourself out of the state to go and find a provider who's willing to do this. And in some cases, some states, you know, like we were looking at Texas, are willing to prosecute you and the doctor that you go to visit if you have this procedure done. That's totalitarianism. It's just insanity to even expect that you would hold people to such a rigid and draconian standard just based on morality. This is not based on medical science, by the way, in case anybody's confused about this. It's not based on a legitimate argument that states that a pregnancy at this age would be this, that, or the other, you know, as far as like determining the health of the child, the health and safety of the mother. They don't give a fuck about any of that. They just want to make sure that babies live, period. And a lot of times they don't even care about the condition of the health of the baby. And I have found a terrifying couple of stories where women have been like, I could have a child who would have developmental disorders, who would have difficulty eating, eating, breathing, walking, and I am not legal, I'm not financially, emotionally, or physically able to handle the needs of this child. And I didn't want to do this, but now I'm poised with this terrible decision. Do I surrender this life to the great beyond and know what that's going to do to me emotionally? Or do I put myself and my family and everyone around me and the child as well, most importantly, through a torturous and possibly very painfully short life? That's the burden that they're putting on women in this state. It's unconscionable. However, in a weird sweep, in a 4-3 decision in the Florida State Supreme Court, there's now a provision to add an amendment that would protect abortion rights by codifying them into the state constitution, which would literally make the ability for a woman to have an abortion the law of the land in the state of Florida. All right. So, you know what? I never thought I would cheer for an abortion, but I do have to say that this is more women's bodily rights autonomy issue to me. I'm not going to preach, you know, 6-1, half dozen the other, you know, when it comes to abortion and pro-life, you know what I mean? Everybody has their own thoughts. But telling women what they should and shouldn't be able to do with their bodies is not the mandate of the federal government. That's up to that woman, her health provider, and God. That's it. That's it. Even if you are the person who impregnates a woman, you only have so much say as she allows you to have. She's still grown. She can go and get that abortion whether you want it or not. She can have that baby whether you want it or not. So those are things to take into account. This is her bodily agency we're talking about. It makes for some sticky situations at times, but I would rather them be able to have control of their own bodies than worry about, as we start to strip rights away from other people in our society, when do they stop taking them? Eventually, it's going to come back to you. You just don't know when. So for those of you who are out there, especially Native Floridians, go register to vote. Look for this amendment that's going to be hitting the ballots. It's going to be, I think it's called Amendment 4. It's going to be locked into our state constitution. Yeah, this is called, this is the way you get the proper title, Amendment to Limit Government Interference with Abortion. It's also being known as Amendment 4, but basically what it says is no law shall prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict abortion before viability or when necessary to protect the patient's health as determined by the patient's healthcare provider. This amendment does not change the legislature's constitutional authority to require notification to a parent or guardian before a minor has an abortion. So, you hear the language, you need to think about it for a little bit, but really what it's saying is, the state can't tell you you can't have an abortion, but if you're under the legal age, you know what I mean, we have to at least tell your parent or guardian before we go through with it. In a way that's only smart and it's only legally binding, you know what I mean? Like only legally intelligent, because honestly, if you're old enough to have sex, you should be old enough to deal with and or accept the ramifications of those decisions, but you shouldn't have to make them by yourself, especially if you're not able or willing to, or if you're under the eyes of the law, not legally allowed to do so. So this is more of a CYA thing for a healthcare provider or an insurance company or, you know, a small clinic or something like that, which I understand. So I'm excited to see that this is actually coming up. Lots of people are excited about it. Currently, the Floridians Protecting Freedom Coalition has gathered more than 1.5 million signatures to add this amendment to the ballot. So keep my fingers crossed that maybe more rational heads will prevail in the state of Florida come November. And I don't want to talk much about the other election stuff, but if we can start working to fix what's broken in our state and local governments. If you look at your municipal governments and whatnot, like these places affect more of your day-to-day life than you possibly realize. So if you have the agency, if you have just maybe like an hour a weekend, go and read through some of the stuff that's happening in your city council, some of the stuff that's happening in your state government, you know what I mean? Look at the bills that are out there and see how much of this stuff actually applies to you, because you'll be surprised at how much stuff just slid right through and no one knows anything about it. I know because I have been, and it's only been within the last decade or so that I started to be more proactive when it came to focusing on how my vote was being used. I think we should all give it a try, right? I mean, a smarter, more informed populace can only be good for everyone. Well, unless you got something to hide, isn't that right? Maybe that's just me, though. That could just be me. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, I was thinking about that, too. Because, I mean, you have to think about, like, the other guy, right? And people will go like, well, I'm just out for me and mine. Nah, I mean, that's great and everything like that. But that doesn't really separate us from the animals. You know, humans are communal animals. Which made me start to think about my neighbors. And most of my neighbors are fine, actually. You know what I mean? They're just regular, decent people getting along. We don't hang out and talk like that. We all have our own lives. And I think that, you know, post the early ravages of COVID, it's also made people a little leery about gathering in big groups in certain instances. And some of my neighbors are actually great. Hung out with them on multiple occasions. Love to see them swing by and say hi whenever I get a chance. Other people, though, you guys may or may not remember. I can't remember if I told this on the podcast or on my stream. One night, Sunday night. So my wife's got to get up in the morning for work on Monday. Sunday night, going on until almost 2:30 in the morning. A group of teenagers were just blasting music the next street over. And it's weird because of the way the houses are positioned. Their house is like slightly southeast of ours. But it's also kind of the way the house is positioned. It hits like a little bit of the retention pond. And if you know anything about sound, it travels forever over water and very clearly. So clearly so that we could hear the lyrics of the song these kids were playing. And we could hear parts of conversations they were having because they were making so much noise out there. And I drove around and went to go and find them. And then you heard the music turn down. Like, uh-oh. Somebody's going to check up on us. Drove back home. Music kicked right back up again. So I turned the car on, turned the lights off, and just drove around. And then when I got out front, I rang the doorbell and just stood there ringing the doorbell. Now, I wasn't about to walk around the back of their door, you know, and just be like, hey, knock this shit off. One, because technically that would have been trespassing. And two, because there's also probably 20 or 30 of them. And I could probably get maybe 3 or 4 in a rush. But if they all decide to bum rush me, it would have been over pretty quick. Then three, that's why we have police. That's why we pay taxes. So I went back home. I called the cops. I'm like, you know, a lot of them looked real young too. And I know that kids look young to everybody, right? When you get older, like everybody looks like a baby to you. No, they don't. No, they don't. As the years that I spent working as a bouncer, I got a pretty good beat on just about how old someone is within about 5 to 8 years, plus or minus. That's still a bit of a swing, but I can kind of tell. And these kids look like some of them weren't quite of legal drinking age. I called the police and, left a report and like, hey, these kids are making a lot of noise. I think they're out there, you know, getting into some wild shit. I definitely see alcohol involved. And some of these kids look pretty young, but it's also 2 o'clock in the fucking morning on Sunday. Somebody come over here and shut these damn kids up. And I love to party. I love to have a good time and play my music and stuff like that. But I also, ever since I was young, I mean, even into my 20s and 30s, you know what I mean? I was like, you gotta have a little bit of respect for the folks around you. You know what I mean? Otherwise, they make life difficult for you. So, you know, I'm almost 100% certain that the cops didn't do shit because they're police and I don't really have a lot of faith in police. But at least the music stopped eventually. But here's the thing. I look about neighbors and stuff like that. There's neighbors that people are talking about like, oh, so-and-so is building this and it's going to encroach on my area, my property. It's right up to the property line. Nobody bothered to ask me or say anything about it. Like, what if I didn't want this unsightly thing right here, but now it's there and I can't stop them because it's on their property. I think there should be like a screening process somehow for like the personality types of people that are going to join a neighborhood. Like if you guys are going to be unconscionable dickheads, like, yeah, you should all get to live together. But the rest of us who want to be decent neighborly neighbors, like we should have to be able to go like, yeah, I don't want Ted over here. You know what I mean? Guy sucks. You know what I mean? He's put like pink flamingos all along the fence line, bro. And then like they fall over into my yard, you know, this, that, and the other. And he's stomping through my grass to pick them up when the wind blows them over. I hate Ted. You know, he doesn't care. He barbecues fish early in the morning. The whole side of my house smells like a Captain D's. Like, what? Why do I have to live next to Ted? It just made me crazy to think about that. You know, it makes us think about, too, when we were looking at this house and all the trouble we had with this thing, like, we really, really should have held out and built on some acreage. It would have had no problem with that. Building in the middle of like four to six square acres. Just put our house right there. Like, ain't nobody around for a hot minute. We don't have to deal with nobody sounds, nobody smells, nobody putting weird shit on our property. We could even, if we buy enough acreage, we could put up a good enough fence and nobody's going to be able to see us. Like I said, you wouldn't need a lot. Maybe somewhere between 4 and 8. It keeps just enough people off you so it's not like super, you know, oh, get away from me. But it also doesn't have them so close that it'd be much of a problem if you put up like a little fence or a hedgerow or something like that to dampen the sound. You don't have to get crazy, you know what I mean? Don't need like a quarter mile in every direction. That's a little bit much. But I wouldn't mind having at least a couple hundred feet. I think that seems fair enough, you know? But I mean, because I love individuals. I've met so many wonderful people, like so many wonderful individuals over the course of my life. I'm just not super crazy about people, in quotes, you know? People, especially in groups, do wild, stupid, ignorant shit. And then, you know, people as a whole, like just society as a whole, is not as nice as we want to give them credit for. Granted, they're not as mean as we want to give them credit for sometimes, but they're not always the best people on the planet. I mean, the stupid things they do, like feeding the little alligators that are here in the pond. They're small enough right now that they're not necessarily much of a problem, but one of them's about 4 feet. And once they get to be a little bit bigger than that, they can be a real menace. And especially if they're comfortable with getting fed by human beings. They can attack dogs. They can attack children. They'll attack people, you know, like full-grown adult people. On occasion, most of the time, like a gator, if it's not defending territory, will just kind of like fuck off and go somewhere else. You know what I mean? You make enough noise or whatever, they kind of go, okay, that's a lot, and they just take off. But when they get emboldened by the thought of having food or easy prey, they can snap a dog through a fence or something like that, or grab a hold of a little kid that's playing outside. That's not going to be a good look for anybody. And these people sometimes still feed them. You're like, why are you doing this? And they, like I said earlier, just building like a weird fence or a bizarre structure without talking with your neighbor. And like, hey, these are the plans we wanted for our house. We know that this is going to border up against your property. Do you have a problem with this? Is it going to be an issue? Having a conversation with your neighbor can go a long way. And to be quite honest, the neighbors on either side, neither one of them bothered to really blink in our direction. And to be quite honest, I don't know that I give a shit, but I also don't want to stay here if I have to live with that kind of just lack of neighborly feeling. You know what I mean? Just like a good neighbor, stay over there kind of thing. I don't really buy into that. I think it's also kind of shitty to be that way as a human being, but what do I know? Let's talk about something a little bit more lighthearted before we get into the last topic of the day. It's not really lighthearted, but it's just gaming related. You know, we talk about free-to-play games and stuff like that. Some of you guys know that I love video gaming. I've been gaming for a long, long time. Free-to-play is basically this idea that you build a game, you make it for everyone to enjoy, obviously free-to-play, but one of the biggest ways that games like this continue is what they call microtransactions. Now, this can be anything from purchasing cosmetic items, you know, making your character have a certain color scheme or a certain design for a weapon or a piece of armor or whatever in the game. Or it could be all the way up to buying levels in the game. You know, hey, I don't want to spend my whole time when I'm playing this game working hard to get to this particular point where I can use this particular skill or whatever. I just want to pay for someone to let me get to that point. And those kinds of things can break the game experience for other players. But if it's a single player game, who cares, right? The problem with the free-to-play model is that it makes it so easy for a company to abuse a player for the money, and it happens at the expense of the quality or the content of the game. You've heard me talk about it before. Destiny 2, one of the biggest abusers of recent times, but also lately, Apex Legends, which had a shining pedigree at the very beginning of its inception, and it was like super beloved. It was a darling in the free-to-play community, especially in the battle arena shooter community. But I think with the power of EA, Electronic Arts, behind them, they started to believe their own hype, and now they're doing the microtransactions things to an egregious degree. Fortnite, probably one of the biggest games on the planet. Just about everybody who knows anything about anything has heard of at least the game Fortnite. While their monetization does also have a free track where you can collect coins that you can use to purchase consumables, they do still have a microtransactions market. Granted, it's not as broken as some of the other ones, but it took a lot of fine-tuning to get them there. Even a game like Overwatch, which was built up as a paid model and then switched to free-to-play, had its own struggles with loot boxes and the idea of gambling for profit, essentially. Well, it was profit for the company, but, you know, they would say, like, oh, these loot boxes is randomized stuff in each one. So if you want to get your best shot at getting the cool stuff that you want, you got to buy a lot of them. And it was a very predatory system, and it still works on people to this day. But it sucks, though, because it's now free to pay. And it's a broken ideology behind gaming, and it makes people pissed off. Angry fans don't make your games, and they don't make your games any money. Because if they start getting feeling like they're being taken advantage of, they can shut your servers down quick just by not going. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're starting to see like a return to single player games and local area network based shooters where people get together and just, hey, look, there's going to be like the eight of us. We'll get on a single network, or we'll play online just against one another and whatnot. And we're going to have fun that way. You're going to start to see some of these free to play games taking a real big hit, I think, in the next year or so, especially because players are tired of this kind of nickel and diming to death, quite literally, of their favorite games. There's a bunch of games out there, if you're into shooters especially, that you want to scratch the itch for. You can still have a good time, and you can even set up local area networks. Games like Wolfenstein, Doom, Borderlands, Ghost Recon, old school classic Call of Duty, those are out there and they exist and they're there for a reason. Or you can always go to a solely single-player experience for a little while until maybe some of this hullabaloo calms down. Because I think that the $70 price point for a lot of these games that are coming out that are broken and buggy is going to break the gaming industry yet again. And this free-to-play model has been a huge, in my personal opinion, it's been a huge contributor to the decline of the industry. Because now you don't have to complete a game as long as you know that the player base is willing to pay you money every week, every month, every year to continue to pay the game. You can essentially finance it into the foreseeable future. You never really have to change anything. You don't have to make upgrades. Just add more glut to the game and just keep the core gameplay mechanics the same. You don't really have to change a whole lot, but you can still just make money hand over fist. But the problem is it's a downward spiral for these AAA devs that can't deliver on that stuff. You've seen, like, in the gaming industry at least, and I know you've heard me talk about it here, companies are firing people by the dozens, sometimes by the hundreds. Certain companies are closing their doors down for good. Companies are even being split up and sold, either piecemeal or at whole. You know, it's a real dark time for the gaming industry. But I think that we as gamers can actually stop this. We can stem the tide. We have to decide as a community of gamers to band together to stop rewarding bad developers and broken games. That means if the new DLC for Game X is coming out and you've known for years that it's just basically like hate screwing the rest of the community, maybe don't buy it this time around. Talk to your friends and go like, you know, let's try another game. Let's do something else. There's got to be something out there that's worth our time and our attention that we don't have to reward this company with more money. And I'm saying this as someone who's been guilty of it for years because I got guilted into it. You know, I didn't want to play Destiny 2. I had avoided it for almost 2 years. I've said this so many times. And then I got back into it and I stayed because of my companionship. The friends that I made when I was playing Destiny 1. The friends that I made getting back into Destiny 2. Building up my own clan in the game. And having a group of people that we would run with and play games with and just have a good time. And they knew how to twist that knife of, hey, your friends are all still here. Aren't you going to join them? And you're like, shit. Fine. Ugh. Stomping your feet all the way to the bank. And they're laughing their way all the way to the bank. I think it's time for us to band together and just be like, enough is enough. One of the things I have noticed too, though, is that retro and like home arcade gaming is coming back. So there's a lot of cool stuff that's happening with like virtual pinball tabletops, which are super cool. A couple of my friends have gotten them. And they're awesome. It looks and sounds and feels just like a normal, you know, pinball machine. But it's a system of triggers and bells and stuff like that that make the noises and sounds and whatnot. But it's a virtual tabletop. It's basically just a giant screen. It's almost like playing pinball on a, you know, 3x2 laptop or 3x2 tablet. You know what I mean? Or, you know, people getting our old school arcade cabinets like I used to see back in the day. You go into the arcade. One of the ones we used to go to was called Fun 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 when I lived in North Carolina. And there'd be like a Neo Geo booth there, and it would have six games crammed into this thing. And you could just push a button to cycle between all the different games, throw in some quarters and go for it. That's actually coming back a lot, as well as like old school consoles and revamped peripherals for stuff like new cases for your Game Boy Advance SP. So you can pull it apart, put a brand new case on there, retool the buttons and the triggers inside of it. And you have essentially created a brand new Game Boy. Or going back and getting old Guitar Hero controllers and cleaning them up, 3D printing stuff. 3D printing has changed so much of the retro and the case mod industry for gaming. It's insane, but it's super cool. It's also a thing I'd love to get in on as well, because being able to put some of my own artwork onto a 3D printed design would be dope. I would really love that. But I think that that's going to be the next new wave, is basically everything that's old is new again, you know? And I'll get my time back in the sun. Who knows? One day you'll probably see me in a professional Frogger championship. Wouldn't that be something? Who knows? But yeah, enough of that. I'm going to close off on this one topic because I saw it and I was kind of like, I don't know that enough people know what this could possibly mean. So it really only came to light, at least to my attention, within the last like day or so. That, I've known about the Barbie movie. I haven't seen it yet. But I've heard all the wonderful reviews and everything about it. And, you know, I think the most heart take that I had about the Barbie movie without having seen it was I felt like it probably was a snub that the main actress and the main actresses who built up the core cast didn't get an Oscar nod, but Ryan Gosling did as a supporting character. It seemed like a little bit more than not okay. I don't know how else to put that. It just seemed like more of like old Hollywood, but also how did he, as a secondary character or supporting character, outshine the lead character? I don't know that that's true. Then again, I haven't seen it, so I don't know. One thing I have come to know, however, is that Shakira, you know, the one whose hips don't lie, took her kids to see it, her two boys, Milan and Sasha, who I believe are ages 11 and 9, to go watch the Barbie movie, and the boys didn't like it. What a surprise. A couple of preteen boys didn't like the Barbie movie. And people are mad at her for saying it out loud. Like, what are you going to do? Be mad at a couple of little kids? They're boys. They're young boys. And I'm not saying that young boys can't like Barbie. I'm just saying that's probably not the target demographic for this film. And so for a couple of preteen boys to not like it, okay, so the fuck what? That would have been fine. That was where it stopped. However, Shakira went on to explain. This is an interesting thing because she didn't have to tell anybody shit. She could have just let this whole thing ride. My boys didn't like it, and the end. However, she said that they felt it was emasculating, and she agreed to a certain extent. Now, Shakira's around my age, a little bit older. She's like, I'm raising two boys, and I want them to feel powerful too, while at the same time respecting women. That's an interesting point that she put there. Like, she wants her boys to be raised to feel powerful and capable as young men, which is a good thing, and also to respect and appreciate women, which is also good. She's a single mom. For those of you who aren't keeping up on Shakira lore, because Lord knows I wasn't, she was married to the boy's father, and they split a while back, and now she lives on her own with the two boys. And she said, you know, she thinks that it's great that pop culture empowers women, while men are allowed to still protect and provide and serve in that traditional gender role. And I don't think that there's necessarily anything wrong with her saying that. I just know that, you know, the cultural backlash, at least in America, was going to slaughter her. And boy, did they come for her. I mean, this is Shakira, though. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what we were expecting right here, but I certainly didn't come here for hard-hitting social commentary from Shakira, of all people. And I appreciate that some of her views have like maybe changed and matured as she's grown and aged as an artist and as a woman and as a mother. Her brand was built on shaking ass. That's literally the song Hips Don't Lie. Like 90% of it is her in a very, very, very revealing dress, shaking it like shaking what her mama gave her. And I know because I saw it. I ain't blind. I seen Shakira before. She's fine as frog hair, and that was one of the things that made her so appealing. Like, she's fine, and she can sing, and she can dance, and she got that body. We were like, ooh. But then she says, you know, I mean, things change, man. She's like, I'm raising two young boys. I want them to be more respectful. I did the same thing. I was a little hound dog back in the day. And now you got to look at him like, yeah, you know, I still like to see that kind of stuff. But, you know, let's maybe tone it down a notch. Just be a little bit more respectful in how we present it, you know, or at least the way that we approach it. You know what I mean? You don't have to walk around like a slobbering dog all the time. But I mean, at the same time, like, you can still appreciate the beauty of the female form. Why not? I like the way that she kind of phrased some of this, though. She's like, I believe in giving women all the tools and the trust that we can to do it all without losing our essence and without losing our femininity. She said, I think that young men have a purpose in society and women have another purpose as well. We complement each other and that compliment should not be lost. She goes on to say that why not share the load with people who deserve to carry it and who have a duty to carry it as well. Now, you gotta also understand another thing, too. She put her career on hold so that her former husband could play soccer. And that's why you haven't heard from Shakira in forever. But she was also raising the boys, you know, staying at home. She's coming back with a new album. She's been out of the public eye for almost a decade, like I think it's like 7 or 8 years. And she's super excited to do that. She made this comment. I'm going to be honest with you. Not that surprised. Because like I said, she's about my age. Shakira's probably raised in a traditional Hispanic Latino home. You grow up with these kinds of values. You know what I mean? That men are supposed to be manly and take care of the women. Women are supposed to, you know, be feminine and provide in the home. And that's not to say that that's the only thing you're good for. So let's not get it twisted right now. But let's just be honest. Certain times, a society, a culture's values may not necessarily play well in American society. That doesn't mean that that culture is wrong. That doesn't mean that society is wrong. That just means that whomever it is that has to reconcile those values within themselves, that is their business. And shitting on them for having a different set of values than you is also a certain form of oppression. Because now, one of the things we're going to realize real quickly is a lot of times when you hear this kind of stuff, it ends up being quote unquote woke culture, which is basically just saying, like, if you don't agree with us, it's a very, and I'm not using the woke in the terminology or in the derogatory sense the way a lot of conservatives use it. I'm just saying, like, as a label, when you're looking at things that are tending to be more progressive and more open-minded, it gets labeled as woke. But then there's a certain group of people who are in there who are just like, everything is good all the time for everyone. And if you don't like what we like, then fuck you. That's a kind of intolerance that's also very shaky and dangerous, because now what you've done is you've superimposed your values over somebody else's. And the scary thing about it is, and you're not going to like this, but it's 100% true, at least from where I've been sitting and watching it. It's a lot of white people who are pushing this agenda. And there's nothing wrong with trying to be inclusionary. There's absolutely everything right with that. But when your inclusion is starting to erase somebody else's personal beliefs, their personal heritage, their personal cultural values, you got to stop. Because your line ends at the other person's front door. You can't tell Shakira how to raise her kids. You can't tell her that what she thinks about how she wants to raise her boys is bad, because you don't want someone to come into your house and do the same thing to you. She's going to get shit for it because she's Shakira, and she said it out loud in public where somebody could hear her and record her in an interview. She had said that shit at home, we'd have never known. And so to that point, we should just treat it like she said it at home. We'd have never known. It wasn't Shakira's necessarily obligation to tell us. Shakira gave us what Shakira wanted us to have. And at that point, you have to respect the fact that she had the balls to say it and stand by it. I do. Even if I don't agree with everything that she said, I have respect the fact that she was like, this is what I believe. This is how I want to raise my children. You do whatever is right for your children and leave me, what I like to call, the fuck alone. So I support that. And it's only because I wouldn't want someone to come in and tell me how to raise my kids and tell me that I'm wrong for the way I'm teaching them, you know, the way I want to instruct them, the way I want them to comport themselves. That seems a little bit like the government or even society kind of reaching and overstepping its bounds into my backyard. I don't need you here. You don't live here. So it's not your fucking problem. What do you think? You got an opinion on this? I'd love to hear what you have to say. Why don't you do me a favor and hit me up over on Patreon? Go to patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. There you can follow for free, you can try a 7-day free trial, or you can pay $3 a month for 2 bonus episodes every month. Those bonus episodes are coming very soon, by the way. So you can go ahead and get a head start on April's bonus episodes by leaving me a question, leave me a comment, leave me a response. Let me know what you think about the podcast. Let me know what you think about this topic or anything else I've talked about today. I'd love to hear from you. If you want to pop in and see video gaming content that's a little bit less incendiary sometimes, you can pop on over to twitch.tv/linkib and check me out over there. Just had our big box subscriber giveaway for the month of March, which is done every quarter. So if you're interested in hopefully winning one of those, you want to stick around and be ready in June. You want to make sure you subscribe through the end of June too. The prizes that are going out are awesome. They look great. And I think that people are really going to enjoy them. And as always, thank you guys so much for your support. Thank you so much for sharing the podcast. And thank you for coming back. And I'm going to thank you in advance for your feedback. I'm really excited to hear what you have to say. So hit me up and let me know what's going on. In the meantime, in between time, you guys have been amazing. I've been Link Flores. This has been the Wandering One podcast. And I'll see you a little further down the road. Peace.